Good afternoon. I will call the Thursday, February 17th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules to order. And members, we did have Senate Bill 270 posted for a work session, but the amendments on that bill are not quite ready, so we will not be taking that up today. We'll be carrying it over and probably take it up next Thursday at our next meeting. We do have one item of business and then an informational meeting. We have several LCs to be introduced as committee bills. There is a summary that Aaron prepared that's at your places that shows what each of these LCs, starting with LC 367, relates to. I don't know if people need any more detail than that. These are just being introduced for the purpose of committee bill introduction, and obviously voting for that motion would not bind you in any way, shape, or form to support, oppose, or do otherwise with them. So,
Madam Chair,
members, a minute to look at this list, and then I'll look for a motion. Yes.
The LC list is helpful to legislators, perhaps, who have a indexed or at least have access to getting the information about relating to and so forth. Are we going to read the relating to clauses so that people listening in would have some idea of what we've introduced?
As part of the motion, we certainly
yes,
could do that.
Could we do that? I think it'd be helpful.
Sure.
Won't take very long.
Do we need to do it before we make the motion or
In discussion or as part of the motion, either way?
As part of the motion.
Okay,
well, I will recognize Senator Atkinson
to
do so.
I'm happy to do this as a courtesy as long as there's no taxation of equine, which was a rather hot bill that was introduced at a committee.
Yeah.
So along those intellectual lines, Madam Chair, I will move that we introduce the following legislative concepts. Legislative concept 367 relating to used copy machines. Legislative concept 1668 relating to the prevention of minors from assessing firearms. Concept number 2776 relating to public finance of candidates. Concept number 2790 relating to expenditures made by an agent of a petition committee. Concept 2794 relating to cross nominations. Legislative concept 3368 relating to the sale of large capacity magazines. Legislative concept 3537, which is a constitutional amendment. Concept number 3563 relating to state finance. Concept 3566 relating to initiatives. Concept 3567 relating to Citizens Initiative Review Commission. Concept 3568 relating to elections. Concept number 3569 relating to elections. Concept number 3571 relating to petitions. Concept 3616 relating to elections. Concept 3617 relating to education. Concept 3627 relating to the executive branch nomenclature. Concept 3629, which is a constitutional amendment, and legislative concept 3849 relating to audits.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Senator Atkinson has moved that LCs 367, 1668, 2776, 2790, 2794, 3368, 3537, 3563, 3566, 3567, 3568, 3569, 3571, 3616, 3617, 3627, 3629, and 3849 be introduced as Rules Committee bills. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, there's no indication and no assumption of where these bills might be assigned for hearing or if or whether they'll ever be heard. So I just wanted that reflected on the record.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. That is absolutely correct. There's no indication of where they go or whence they come. So, Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries, and these LCs will be introduced as committee bills. Okay, and I'll close the work session. And I'll open an informational meeting, and this is the only further matter to come before us. We are lucky enough to have with us both Gary Blackmer and Barry Pack to talk to us about the audits division and shed light on what they do there. So please come forward. Thank you, and welcome back, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. I'm turning off my phone, as I remembered. As you mentioned, with me is Gary Blackmer, the Director of our Audits Division, and we have a presentation that we've given as an overview of the Audits Division and the new focus and direction that the Secretary has directed Gary to take, which we'd be happy to walk through with you, or if you just have specific questions you'd like answered. I know you all have a lot on your agendas for the afternoon, so leave that open to the committee's pleasure.
I think probably the abbreviated version of the overview would be just great, and then questions, if members have questions. I haven't heard the presentation before, so.
We'll hit the highlights. I'll just start with making a couple of quick comments about the direction that the Secretary has given Gary. We were very lucky early on in last year. We seized upon the opportunity to snag Mr. Blackmer from his retirement and bring him in as an expert on performance auditing, really one of the leading national experts on it, because the Secretary wanted to refocus the performance audit work in the division. And the way I'll describe it very briefly is, you'll hear her say this on multiple occasions, is to focus on alligators versus mosquitoes, and that in the past some of the audit work that had been done was really looking at the annoying insect that bites but itches, but that really is all that it is, where the agency head may have alligators at their ankles that they really need help fighting for. So as an example, when she took office, there was an audit underway of state cell phone policies. It was a good audit. It identified that with better management, the state could be saving money matching usage to the plans, and it probably identified about $250,000 worth of savings. With the new focus and Gary's leadership, we conducted an audit of the Department of Revenue, identified 66,000 taxpayers who had filed a federal return, had Oregon income, but did not file an Oregon tax return or pay Oregon taxes, that identified $109 million of savings, which the auditors estimated about $54 million could be collected based on prior practice. So that's a good example, I think, of what we, when we talk about mosquitoes versus alligators. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Gary and let him be the expert on auditing and the work that his division does.
Thank you, Madam Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. It's a great pleasure to give you a quick overview, and I'm going to just kind of wing through this. The mission has stayed the same for our office. The audit standards that we follow are the same. We've got the same talented pool of people, but ultimately, I think using that metaphor again, I'm training them to wrestle alligators. And I think they're actually quite good at it, and they're realizing they're good at it. So what we've started to do is ask bigger questions about what matters to Oregonians. And it's a simple way to approach it. What's the mission of the agency? How are they accomplishing it? And what can they do to better accomplish it? So we don't start by picking something out deep in the organization and trying to figure out if it works better or not. We start with, what is their principal goal that they're trying to accomplish with this program? We're talking to the frontline staff. We're analyzing the data that they have. And we're looking for ways that we think they could do better. And what that does is it kind of pushes an agency to improve. And that's really the goal that we establish. Now, we're still doing our financial audits, which takes about half of our resources. Those are mandated by federal law. If we want to get federal funds, we need to do an annual financial statement audit as well as compliance audit each year. Plus, we do some of them under contract. Some of them we work through with mainly our resources for the more difficult ones. We conduct information technology audits. That's about 8% of our resources that goes into looking at the computer systems at the state, testing to see how secure the information is from intruders, that it's being properly calculated and operating as intended. We also monitor the financial audits of municipalities to make sure that the CPA firms are doing a quality job of auditing states, counties, service districts. There's about 1,700 of these organizations. We look at the audits that are performed by these CPA firms. We assess how good it is. We go out and look at their work papers. We talk to them about their work, and we're pushing up the quality of the work as a result for that. We operate a fraud hotline as well, which takes calls from the public and from government workers, and we investigate those to see if there's any opportunities to improve our oversight in terms of internal controls, but also investigating abuse and government waste. So let me focus a little more on our performance audits and give you a better sense of what we're doing differently. We spend about 38% of our time on our performance audits, and we're focusing mainly on management practices. We're looking at how well an agency is managing its resources, it's training its employees, it's setting up policies and procedures, and addressing the right things that need to be done in order to accomplish their goals. And out of that, we identify efficiencies, savings, or better results. Some of them translate directly into dollars. Some of them translate into better quality, more timely services for Oregonians, safer living situations for Oregonians. There are a lot of non-quantifiable things I think that performance audits can do when we start talking about mission. Because our fundamental goal with each of these is not just to identify the problems, but it's also to identify solutions. So what that means is we're able to diagnose a problem, but also figure out what causes that problem and direct our recommendations to help agencies more quickly implement those recommendations and better serve the public. And in the course, we're also trying to be a catalyst for change in an organization. So we want to pick out the thing that's most important in terms of moving that organization forward. It's less of a gotcha kind of an audit in these cases and more of an improvement and pushing an organization. I say that we challenge managers to manage better. And ultimately, what we find is if we're tackling big problems that they have, we are ultimately helping them do a better job, and they're appreciating it. We approach each audit skeptically, that we don't necessarily know that they're doing a good job, but ultimately we're going through and picking out the area where we think we can be the best assistance. So we look at those areas, and we also are looking at the state on a regular basis to figure out where we can make the best use of our resources. Secretary of State Kate Brown wants us to be as smart about what we do with our resources as other agencies. So we're looking at things like the risks that are inherent in that agency's mission. We're looking at the size of its budget, that obviously a larger budget has more opportunities for savings. What kind of data is available on their performance? What kind of outcomes or benefits could come from an audit in a particular area. We're also looking at the timing of the organization. If there's large change happening, we don't necessarily want to go in and audit something that's no longer going to be in existence in the future. We want to get into an area where we think there are changes necessary, but no one has really seen them yet or acted on them. And also we need to look at the availability of our staff and the skills that they bring. I want to mention in passing, we have a great talented staff, and we're doing more cross-training, but we're also giving them broader tools, more analytical tools, so that when they approach an agency, it's not just one or two things that they can help the agency with, but we've got teams that have all sorts of analytical tools that diagnose and solve problems for agencies. I guess one of the other things I want to mention also is we're always trying to figure out what the legislature would like to know, and we're trying to think about ways that we can anticipate problems, emerging issues before they happen. So we depend a lot upon Secretary of State Kate Brown and her 17 years to give us some insights into what kinds of things you all are struggling with or you will be struggling with, so that we can get those on our audit schedule and try to prepare things that help you, inform you, and actually help agencies come to you with ideas for improvement. Let me talk real briefly about three audits that we did. Barry Pack talked about our Department of Revenue audit. That was one where I would call it brute force analysis went on, where we had millions of records from the IRS, millions of records from Department of Revenue, and we were matching them up and then calculating what the estimated taxes would be on those, and then ultimately coming down with the $109 million finding. We also made recommendations about improvements in collections, how they could better collect that money, and how they could better identify non-filers. We're going to be going back and auditing them in April and looking at a third element of their responsibilities, which is the tax filings and the auditings of those. And we'll also be following up on the recommendations from that audit. So that's one example of a kind of an audit that we do. Vocational rehabilitation was an audit in Department of Human Services where we looked at how well they were serving people who had disabilities and were trying to seek employment. And they actually had a waiting list of clients who they couldn't serve because they didn't have enough money. When we looked at the performance measures that they were reporting to the federal agency over them, we found that Oregon was one of the most effective in finding employment for their clients, but they were also the second most costly among all the state vocational rehabilitation agencies. So we focused in on how they were managing their costs, how they were serving their clients, and provided a number of strategies that they were able to pursue, and ultimately what they came back and committed to us and to you and to the public was that they can make a 20% reduction in their costs, and that in and of itself would allow them then to serve all the clients that were on that waiting list. So essentially that was another very constructive, positive audit that we were able to do the kinds of analyses that they didn't necessarily have in their purview to be able to identify strategies for savings. We also did an audit of the Willamette Education Service District. That was an audit that was requested by the Oregon Department of Education regarding some questions around their financial practices. In that one, what we found were extensive weaknesses in all of their practices around financial management, personnel, contracting, and we made a large number of recommendations, not only around their processes and procedures, but their accountability and ultimately their governance. That what we saw was an agency that needed more oversight, that needed to be more accountable, and we made a large number of recommendations, and they actually brought in their outside auditors to assess their progress on those recommendations, but we're also there right now conducting a follow-up, and we'll be issuing a report on that. So that gives you an idea about three very different kinds of audits that we've been doing here. They cover financial, they cover real, you know, complex analysis of large data sets. They look at performance directly related to the clients that they're trying to serve. And that's the kind of range that I'm hoping we can continue to provide in terms of our audits in the future. We're very, very cognizant of performance measures of the agencies we audit, but we're also tracking our own. We have three key ones that we're looking at. We look at the amount of savings or costs avoided that we have identified each year in our audits. And I wish all of our years could be as good as this one, because this was a great start. We had $152 million in identified savings, and that was between actually our child support enforcement audit and Department of Revenue, which were the largest ones where we were able to identify ways that agencies could improve their operations. So that's a nice a goal for us to continue to shoot for. I don't know that we'll hit it every year, but we'll do our very best. A second measure that we look at is how much our audits cost versus what they return. And again, this is an area where we've done very well this year, and we returned $64 for every dollar spent in our performance audit section. And then lastly, and most importantly, I think, is the implementation of our recommendations. We really are concerned that agencies implement our recommendations, and we want to make sure that they continue to implement as many as possible. Now, we don't want to mandate that they implement our recommendations, because that makes us more like the director of the agency than the oversight body. So to the degree that we are recommending and building a persuasive case is as far as we think we can go and stay within our audit standards, but we're still hitting a 75% implementation rate. And I'm frankly thinking we can hit that even higher as we go higher in terms of the value of our recommendations to the agencies. So in terms of follow-up, to make sure that those recommendations are implemented and we can increase them, we've done a number of things to change our approach. We have always been annually asking the agencies to report to us on what they've done on our recommendations. We examine that. We call them and explore a little more on what they've done, and that is part of our KPM, our key performance measure. But what we're doing now also is we're not going to stop asking after the first year. Our measure used to be what percentage of our recommendations were implemented in the first year. We're going to keep asking year after year until the agency says it's been implemented or we're not going to implement it. So then we have a better idea of where that recommendation ultimately ended up. So we're sticking to those recommendations longer. And I see a question.
I was going to let you finish.
Oh, okay. I got two more sentences and I'll be done. So that's one area. Another is we also are going to be doing more follow-up audits. As I mentioned with WESD and Department of Revenue, we're also going to be going in and following up on our audit recommendations with the Blind Commission. So those are kind of the key measures for our audits. Oh, and one other one I should mention is our Secretary of State is meeting with agency heads for key audit findings and chatting with them about what they're doing to implement the recommendations. So there's a great value in having her have that communication as well. So at that, I'll wrap up, and I just want to say I'm really enjoying being an auditor here at the state, and I've got a great team of professionals, and I think they're as excited as I am about making a positive difference for Oregonians.
Thank you. And Senator Beyer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like that approach. You have a great approach to this, but I was curious, what is the requirement for agencies in terms of commenting back to the Secretary of State on whether they were going to implement something or not? I like that follow-up approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, we start by, in the course of our audit, we're communicating with them. I'm sorry, Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer. We start our audit by communicating with them the areas that we're auditing in. Then we start telling them kind of what we're finding and asking them, does this seem right to you? So we're engaging with them in that problem identification and definition. And generally what we find is that we're discovering something they don't know or something that they've been struggling with themselves. And that becomes kind of the first point where we think we can have the biggest impact on them implementing our recommendations, because communication starts among all the members of that organization then about what's going on here, what can we do about it. And so we start early so that by the time we're actually ready to issue that audit report, they've responded. Every one of our audit reports, which are on our website, by the way, in the back is a response from the agency. And in most times, it's a commitment to implement specific actions to respond to our audit recommendations. So in and of at that point, many of them are committed and they're working toward that implementation. But as I said, we do follow up to make sure that they did what they committed to do, and then we'll go out and we'll actually say, well, you told us you did this. show us how you've done it. So we'll be looking for evidence that they actually took the actions that they claimed they did when they reported to us. And if they don't, then we'll be issuing audit that says whether they did or didn't. In the back of our Oregon Youth Authority audit that we issued toward the end of this year, we followed up. There was the first one where we reported on 10 recommendations about data quality regarding ensuring that juvenile justice data was accurately reported. And in those, as I recall, 9 of the 10, they agreed to implement and had either completed or were in the process. And one of them, they said, given the rate of error we saw in the counties, we think the cost of implementing this recommendation would exceed the benefits that would be received.
Madam Chair, follow up. Do your findings normally get discussed with the Legislative Audits Committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, the Legislative Audits Committee has not been formed over the last several years. Mm-hmm. So while we have been here, no. We have given the same presentation to a number of committees so far this month. And I know that the House Special Committee on Audits is now, I think, a joint committee, so there may be some opportunity there. We've also been discussing with individual legislators the idea that one real good place for these reports to come out might be in agency budget hearings at the subcommittee level. Those members are very mm-hmm. familiar with the mission and programs and expected outcomes of an agency and the resources that are provided to them, and that if one of the reasons an agency might not be implementing a recommendation is a resource question, well, then that's coming out in front of the very folks who have direct ability to make some recommendations around those resources. So I did see a bill got introduced in the House just yesterday on this topic, so I'm hoping we might have some further conversations about that.
I think it's important, Madam Chair, to close that loop. I think it's really helpful. I know in the past it's kind of been disconnected. Reports get filed and no one looks at them. And I like the fact that you're following it up. It makes a lot of sense. Personally, I'd like to see if they're not going to implement something, it'd be nice to have it on record why they don't think so. And explain if you're thinking there's a savings there. That makes a lot of sense to do that. One other question. You mentioned that as part of the revenue audit, you looked at their collection system. One of the things that I've noticed in talking with a lot of different agencies is that it strikes me that the collection systems are not very good. A lot of the stuff ages way too long before it's turned over to private collectors, and we lose a lot of revenue that way. Are you looking at that? And as we're looking at scarce revenues, is that on your list, I guess, that I'm saying, to take a look at that in a combined way and suggest how we might do a little better job of collecting?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, we have focused at this point on Department of Revenue, but we are aware of other efforts that are underway. I believe there's a committee working now on judicial collections and some other areas that we have thought about. But at this point, we're putting together ideas for audit schedules, and that certainly is one that we could add as an idea for future consideration.
A lot of change left on the ground.
And if I could add on to the earlier question, I see follow-up as a good news also for the public, that if agencies actually have implemented our recommendations, it's a sign of good faith that they've tried to do better and they have done better. And so it can be a very good news kind of a report that comes to your committees at that time as well.
Thank you.
Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might be helpful, Senator, doing this background, to have a little discussion about the communications issues that are, or at least the messages that were passed between the Legislative Audit Committee and the Secretary of State's office. And I don't know if you folks have the history there, but when the Legislative Audit Committee meets, it's normally in the interim. Mm-hmm. And we essentially take the work product of the Legislative Audit Committee from the interim and deliver it to legislators as they're coming in to the legislative session, with the idea that that process could help inform the creation of new policy directions or at least give legislators feedback. We've discontinued that as a decision of leadership in the Senate, and not all members agree that we shouldn't be continuing the legislative audit function, because it is a way for legislators to continue the process of continuous improvement. And also, it seems to be one of those things that maybe the president's talked about a lot, about strengthening the legislative branch, because with a legislative audit committee, members of the committee get to select which areas and what agencies and what programs should come up for audit, instead of just receiving the work product from the Secretary of State. And of course, there are differences in the kind of legislative audits that were being done by the Legislative Audit Committee and the kind of constitutionally mandated audits that get done by the Secretary of State. Mostly, and I'd love to engage a discussion about this, mostly the audits that are done by the Secretary of State involve comparing the means and mechanisms and standards that are applied to financial reporting. They really are looking at whether or not the usual and customary business practices are being applied by the folks that are watching the numbers and reporting that data and creating year-end and quarterly and other kinds of reports. So really, a lot of the work done by the Secretary of State is making sure the procedures are properly followed, not whether or not the agency is carrying out the policies that were intended by the legislature, unless somebody specifically specifies that the audit is to become or to be a performance audit. So, there's at least three kinds of audits that are done by the Secretary of State's office. One is that performance audit when requested. The other is the usual and customary audits that are done on agency budgets and programs. And then another one is the change audit, where a director is replaced, and you get an opportunity to go back through, the handling of the executive director's decisions and, where's the laptop, where's the keys to the car, it's very nuts and bolts, but it's an important thing. Sometimes those change audits are a great opportunity to find problems, and you don't have to look much further than the Oregon State Penitentiary Kitchen and Food Service audit that was done as a result of some allegations of impropriety there, to see it could have implications that are huge. So that's an awful lot of setup for the question. We have a legislative audit committee that hasn't met for a couple of years, and I noticed that in your brochure you're describing expansions of the Secretary of State's role, but could you describe the constitutional requirements for auditing by the Secretary of State? Because it's fairly well circumscribed.
Shall I start, or would you like to?
Go ahead, and I'll fill in, Gary.
Well, the Constitution says that the Secretary of State is the auditor of public accounts, and that, to me, is it raises the same question that we always ask, which is, what did you do with the money? That ultimately, there's a lot of ways you can ask that. What were the transactions like? But ultimately, to me, the most important question always is, what good did that produce for the public? And all of those fall under the same audit guidelines. They all fall under performance auditing. And so to the degree that we do, if I could be candid, one of the reasons why we haven't done the kinds of audits I'm describing here is partly because it's a new kind of auditing. There aren't a lot of other states in the country that do the kinds of performance audits I've just given you examples of. It's been happening more at the local government level than at the state level. So what you are seeing now is essentially leading-edge government auditing. We're doing things that the GAO, the U.S. Government Accountability Office, is studying and impressed with. So that's the kind of thing that I was asked to bring here, and I'm doing my very best to expand what we do. And the thinking about what we choose to audit is more on the management level than at the policy level, because what we see the legislature as setting the direction of government. And agencies are trying to achieve that their mission toward that direction. And our role is to boost them up to get there better. So what the legislature sets is kind of the missions, and we're helping agencies better achieve their missions. And it has to do more with the mechanics of government, I think. So that I don't know if that helps answer your question, but
I'm sure it gets closer. But what I really wanted to get after was there was a disagreement between the previous Secretary of State in application of what was considered to be the role of the audit functions of the Secretary of State and this Legislative Audit Committee. And you know, for a little while, we had a kind of a hot email and communications effort going on between the two agencies. The Secretary of State's position was it was the only authorized entity to do audits. And I think the Legislative Audit Committee countered with, well, you're responsible for the looking at balance sheets and the accuracy of numbers and the integrity of accounting practices. That is really very clearly the role. But when it comes to deciding whether or not agencies met their policy goals, that's a legislative function. So, you know, there seems to be sort of a blending now of the performance audit with the fiscal audit, and I don't think that's harmful to anybody's objectives. But by the same token, I wouldn't expect the Secretary of State to be a policy-setting entity. I would expect the legislature to be a policy-setting entity and then also have the obligation to do legislative oversight, adjustments of budget based on performance, and really to have a handle on how performance of the agencies reflects the intent of the legislation. And so, you know, it could be a great partnership between the legislative branch and the executive branch, but I don't think under any circumstances the legislative branch should walk away from the Legislative Audit Committee, and in fact the House has made the decision that it will not walk away from that responsibility. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly. And I think the Senate President just appointed Senate members to the Joint Audits Committee, too. So I haven't checked the schedule lately, but I'm assuming they're planning to meet regularly during this 2011 session. So maybe some of the things you're talking about are part of their work plan.
And Madam Chair, I think this is the first time we've had an Audits Committee meeting during session that's legislative. Normally, as I said, the Legislative Audit Committee met over that 18-month period between sessions and, you know, conducted their work and were free to pick audit targets, which, you know, I mean, that's one of those things that I think tends to keep agency heads a little bit on their toes because they never knew from, you know, audit committee meeting to audit committee meeting what the pleasure of the audit committee would be to drop an audit in the hopper and get it done. Plus, it's conducted by different people. The legislative audits were conducted by legislative fiscal officers and staff, and they are the ones that constructed the budgets for legislators on the front end, so they were the ones that knew, you know, a lot about the discussion of intent and how the money was supposed to be applied and flow and be reported. So it really was engaging people, you know, at the back end of a process that were also engaged in the creation of the process. A little different approach and a little different function and focus than what I conceive the Secretary of State's audit responsibility to be under the Constitution.
Okay. Thank you for those comments. I wanted to ask you about the hotline, and I just don't know that much about the hotline. So is it answered by live people? Do people leave recorded messages? And then how do you sift through the kinds of information that you get that way?
Madam Chair, we have a contract with a national firm that runs a 24/7 telephone line. So anyone can call, and they'll get a live person to talk through their concerns. We also will take any kind of filing any way possible. So if someone walks in, if they want to send an email, if we have a website where they can report concerns. So we'll take a complaint in any way possible. And then we essentially conduct a preliminary investigation on it to determine, you know, what exactly is this complaint about. We're sorting them. Sometimes they're not a violation or a waste issue. Sometimes they're not related to state government. So we're kind of winnowing it down to those that we definitely do need to do an investigation on. We conduct our investigation, and then we'll issue audit reports on those investigations and post them on our website. In many cases, they look like audit reports. We'll say somewhere in the narrative that this was initiated by a hotline call, but we're very cautious about revealing any information that could reveal the identity of the caller. And so we ultimately try to develop our own evidence independent of that call so that there's no way that anyone can connect that investigation with someone who did call. So that's ultimately how we proceed with those hotline calls.
And I noticed there's a bill to, it looks like, further clarify how the confidentiality of reports that you get that way. And
yes, Madam Chair, we have been operating it since 1995, and there were a number of housekeeping matters that we had encountered where sometimes people would like us to forward their information that they provided us to the appropriate agency, but we were not allowed to do that. In other cases, they wanted to waive their confidentiality. We weren't sure that we were able to do that. But the most probably important thing, I think, there is that there are some hotline calls, hotlines set up at the local government level. Metro, Multnomah County, City of Portland all have hotlines, and we wanted to make sure that they had the same, they could provide the same protections to their callers as the callers to the state hotline. So it expands those protections to all of the callers, regardless of which jurisdiction they call.
Great. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Looks like you've given us all the information we can handle for one afternoon. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll have you back as things may develop further this session. But now that we have an active Joint Legislative Audits Committee, you probably will be seeing more of them than you will of us. Okay, well, thank you very much for being here today. And members, that completes our agenda. We will be meeting next week tentatively. I believe we're going to have a presentation from the Ethics Commission. Is that right, Erin? Probably, assuming that the bill that we were not able to do today because the amendments weren't back, we expect we'll probably have those amendments back, and then also possibly some bills relating to ethics up at the same time. I think in terms of the executive appointments function of this committee, we're anticipating that probably we may have some appointments to start hearing at the meeting following the next one. Is that right?
Yes, the first week of March is what we're anticipating doing some executive appointment sessions.
Great.
So I assume we determined or council determined that the reappointment or of all the existing department heads doesn't have to go through reconfirmation?
Senator Beyer, I do not know the definitive answer to that question. I think there was some evaluation going on with Legislative Council of whether that is required or not.
Seems a bit redundant. I hope the council comes on that
one. Well, Chairman, depends on whether or not the governor has been determined to actually to have accepted the resignations that were tendered. And if they have been accepted, I'm guessing we need to reconfirm. If they were accepted on a case-by-case basis, perhaps we don't have to go back and reconfirm those. And that, you know, just because of the economy of effort, I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's what we're trying to get at.
I'm assuming
final answer
didn't
to
accept them.
Well, I would certainly I'd stick to that story if it were me.
Okay, well, with members, thank you for your patience. And with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.